The smell of fireworks and hot dogs and freedom are in the air on this very special episode of the Buffer Podcast. We're calling it the 4th of July grand finale. We didn't really come up with a
Are you making this up?
It's 4th of July.
Yeah.
I'm making it up. It's the 4th of July. How about this? The 4th of July freedom extravaganza.
Yes.
Right?
FJFE.
Yeah, car dealerships always have that, like, it's the freedom 4th of July sale. Like, we could do that with the podcast.
So you can blow the car up with a firecracker and we'll still buy it.
So it's good to be back with you all again. Hopefully you get some time off this week or early next week. It's kind of weird with the 4th of July happening on a Sunday this year. But we're happy that you're here nevertheless. If you're streaming this on your phone or tablet or computer, maybe it's at Spotify, anchor.fm. on your iPhone, Android, whatever the case may be, please hit that subscribe button. And then if you want to be really cool and maybe we'll send you a bottle rocket, you could leave a review and rate this podcast, Joel. That would help us a lot.
Yes, yes, it would. We're trying to build that listenership. And big thank you to all of you faithful listeners, because we have several. We just need more. Got a couple sponsors on the hook. We need the help. We need your help to help us close them.
We're almost making as much money as Joe Rogan, so just put it out there. Watch out, JRE. Maybe Spotify will be buying us out next. I mean, they bought Dax Shepard, armchair expert. Like, Spotify, call us. We're easy to get a hold of. When we're totally prepared to sell out and go exclusive.
Anybody, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't even have to be such the juggernaut that Spotify is. We'll take anybody at this point.
Public access podcast. It's the Wayne's World version. Why doesn't anybody start that? Like the lo-fi podcast network. Like that could be our.
Maybe that's our thing. Maybe we need to shut up and we need to start this. Yeah. This network. The one thing that we used to talk about sometimes at the radio station when we were both there, it was we have a price. We always had a price. Like whenever we would discuss what would you do, whether it was remote or whatever, it just depended. Were you willing to pay for it? Because
how much does it cost?
I don't have a ton of shame. I'll go into a dunk tank. Yeah. I'll dress up as a woman. I really will do anything for the right. Not anything, but anything that's the moral hangover. Can't exceed the actual hangover. That's my motto. But I'll do anything for a price, including sell our podcast.
All right. So this week is a little different, and the format's going to be slightly tweaked because it is 4th of July, and Joel and I both have spent a lot of time over the years seeing movies around 4th of July weekend. And when you start to think about some of the all-time movie releases over the course of movie history, there's a lot of big films on the list that we found courtesy of the ringer.com. So thank them for doing some of the legwork. But a lot of it, Joel, is kind of obvious when you think about who's on the list. But I was surprised. I will say there were a couple that I didn't perhaps remember coming out around the 4th of July. And then there's just some big old fun movies. So, and this year, no exception. I know that a lot of people are going to go see The Boss Baby. It's like the perfect family movie follow-up. And there's nothing that we love more than walking into a ice cold movie theater when it's hot and humid in the state of Iowa where we're at.
Right. And I also think of all the 4ths of July where it rained because we're in that thunderstorm season. And that was just a lot of times. So that's what you had to go do because parade was canceled and you couldn't shoot off fireworks in the rain. And so you just went and checked out a movie.
I mean, I feel like you could shoot off fireworks in the rain if you. Now people would tell you like, well, I got a tent. And then it was like, you're going to shoot fireworks under a tent?
Or they build a special pallet bunker that, you know, when I was in the metal industry a few years ago, I actually designed a fireworks launching station made out of, 20 gauge steel. And it works pretty well. I still have it in my backyard. And The only reason we couldn't sell it is because our insurance company wouldn't let us market it as a fireworks device. Like, it was one of those things where it's like they didn't want us to take on the liability should it like blow up in someone's hands. So we could sell it as a holder, like a holder of like bottles, but we couldn't say. And it's pretty sweet. It's got three cutouts for bottles, and it's angled so that they're like pointed away. And then there's a 4 foot by 6 inches firecracker pan that you can just put all your firecrackers in there, and it kind of keeps all your everything in one space. And it's really good for the urban fireworks launch. That's that smart. That was what I was going for. Yeah.
And 2 years ago, I made the mistake of just lighting a couple mortars for my driveway. And the second one, it went boom. So it went straight up, but as soon as it shot out of the tube fell over, and I like freaked out because I thought, oh my gosh, if that would have fallen over, it would have gone straight across the street into my neighbor's house. And like,
yeah.
And I just thought, like, I don't need residential neighborhood like where you and I are. You don't need to drop mortars. I'm sorry. Like, I'm good with like get one of the small cakes if you'll have it, or get bottle rockets and
or Roman candles or something a little bit smaller scale.
Even Roman candles make me nervous. Like, I get paranoid because I think about all the times in my life I've held a Roman candle, even though it says don't hold this, and then you feel it start to. And I dropped. So a couple years
paranoid
ago,
by your own stupidity.
Yes, a couple years ago I dropped a Roman candle in my backyard, and my neighbor Jason was there, and the last three just shot into the alley, and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I freaked out.
I panicked."
So maybe I just don't need to do fireworks this year.
Yeah,
where we moved, I think we'll have enough of a show. You know.
Yeah, you can see the riverfront from your beautiful porch, but like you're up on a hill, and when I'm shooting fireworks off, and I don't do it a ton just because my neighbor's a cop and it's legal, but he deals with that stuff all month of June and July, and the last thing I think he wants to do is on his day off on the 4th of July having his neighbor just going all pyro, and my other neighbor has a dog that's a little bit skittish, and so we've decided that we don't do them at our house very much, but we're shooting them into the woods, so as long as it's not super dry, like we don't have that house immediately behind us, as I talked about last week's pod where I had to cut the tree down. We're a little bit more isolated, so even though we're still in town, we're still kind of isolated.
You'd rather just have a brush fire that maybe will lead back to the nursing home.
It would take a significant act of God to jump the road to the nursing home.
We had a derecho in Iowa last August, so sure. I think at this point anything is possible.
Fair enough.
Can be nothing that surprises us. All right, so 4th of July, 2021, it feels certainly more normal in the world. Well, most places. Some places are going back into a lockdown, but at least here in this great state of Iowa, compared to where we were a year ago, things are certainly much more open. Folks are going to be out and about. That includes going to local movie theaters. And maybe you're not going to find yourself in a theater this weekend, but you are going to have time over the holiday. If you're off Monday, for instance, you want to revisit some 4th of July classic movies. So I think, Joe, what the plan is, you're saying that we're going to go 3-2-1?
We're going to go 3-2-1, kind of like we did the baseball Mount Rushmore thing. We're going to go 3-2-1. I'm going to give my respective, but I think before we should start off with one or two. You pick one or two honorable mentions that didn't quite crack your top three.
Okay,
then we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's a heck of a list.
And these aren't 4th of July themed movies. These are movies that were released over the 4th of July holiday.
Okay, so I'm gonna go first with just an honor. I might just do one or two honorable mentions, like you said, but for sure, and a lot of these are like circumstantial, and I vividly remember seeing The Perfect Storm, everybody, when that came out in the year 2000.
Some of the greatest bad Boston accents in the history of film.
You're talking George Clooney,
Diane Lane. Worst accent ever. Lane.
John C. Reilly. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio in The Perfect Storm?
I believe so.
High school classmates with my mom, Sheila.
Of course.
My mom and I did see her at the Bed Bath & Beyond in Forest Park, Illinois.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
This is how long ago it was. I was maybe either just out of college or still in college. I was very hungover. And my mom's like, there's Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. And I was like, you should go say hi. And she's like, I haven't talked to her in forever. And I'm like, Mom, she was in Scarface. Like, she was in The Perfect Storm. So Perfect Storm, big summer blockbuster. I can tell you that it was at North Riverside Mall in North Riverside, Illinois, in the theater. It was a hot day because I remember going, you know, walking to the car after the film, and it was just still super hot and humid and sticky. And in the year 2000, that would have been, so for the summer of the year 2000, that was heading into what, my junior year of high school, if I'm not mistaken.
I was
fought with a couple buddies, and I wouldn't say that it's rewatchable for me, but when I saw it on the list, I was like, it's worth an honorable mention.
It was it's actually was one of my honorable mentions as well. And I vividly remember where I saw it. I saw it in the movie theater in Centerville, Iowa. My baseball team, my high school baseball team, played in the Centerville baseball tournament every year, which is down in, you know, south central Iowa. And like, you stay at this really like old school motel, and it's nice. We were the biggest school in this tournament, and so it was a fun tournament because we were always pretty good and a 4A school here in Iowa. So so we watched it as a team.
Rare to have Muscatine High School be considered the big city.
Well, but
oh, you did?
In 2000, we were the number 6 ranked team in the state. One of my classmates was a major league draft pick. And the year prior to that, or 2 years prior to that, we went to the state tournament and finished 3rd. So that was kind of I'm not trying to toot our own horn, but that was a big 5-year period for our baseball team. But yes, we went and saw it as a team in the movie theater in Centerville. Nice. And yeah, it was a good time. The Perfect Storm. And then the other anecdote I'll have about that is, if you watch the TV show Love, the Paul Rust vehicle on Netflix,
yes,
they play this game with their buddies where they take a movie and they write a theme song for movies that don't have a theme song or need a theme song. And the most memorable one to me is The Perfect Storm, where they're all sitting around playing the guitar and he's like, it's the perfect storm. It's perfect storm. it's just great. The whole 70s like theme song to that was awesome. But yeah, Perfect Storm, that was a co honorable mention for us. And then since I'll go ahead with my other honorable mention here.
Do it.
As well, we're going in, and it's similarly as ominous, the 2005 remake, the Tom Cruise, Steven Spielberg, Tim Robbins, War of the Worlds. I think Dakota Fanning is in it as well. The modern rendition of the H.G. Wells Take Over the Earth piece of... Is it IP? Intense. Is War of the Worlds IP? I mean...
I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Very intense, big movie, but I feel like, was it... Did it underperform?
Probably.
Am I not remembering that?
I think it probably... I saw it in theaters, and I really enjoyed it. And I think I just have always had a special place for War of the Worlds. I remember my grandpa talking about the radio broadcast, and then I remember studying, obviously, the radio broadcast. But then in like the 80s, there was a TV miniseries version of War of the Worlds that I remember. So just kind of this has always been an omnipresent topic in my life, and so I enjoyed the movie, and so it's kind of, it made my honorable mentions list.
75% Rotten Tomatoes, so the critics agree with you.
It's not bad.
Hard to believe that that is 16 years ago.
Yep.
2005. That's one of those things, directed by Steven Spielberg, by the way, who just inked a nice production deal with Netflix, so that, not that he needed the money.
It's crazy that Steven Spielberg is on the Netflix train now.
Well, it's just good that he's...
It's a different topic, though, probably for a different day.
Things. Like, I think it's outstanding. It did $234 million at the box office, just because I'm curious. And I was going to say that, I was going to mistakenly say that's Tom Cruise at his peak power, but Tom Cruise has been performing at his peak capacity since, what, Risky Business?
Was that like 1983?
Was that really like, he hasn't really like...
Was it, what was the one where he was the football player? All the Right Moves? Such a good movie. Such a good movie.
Like, I'm going to go out and say, and I'm not going to turn this into a Tom Cruise podcast, but I will go on the record of saying that I believe the most underappreciated Tom Cruise performance is Vanilla Sky.
It's a great performance. Here's the thing. We should do a buffer battle of the Tom Cruise movies when Top Gun 2 comes out. We should.
Not a bad idea.
That should be one of our battles.
Yeah. Now listen, Vanilla Sky Rotten Tomato score is 42%. I don't care. I'm here for it. I saw it in theaters. Cameron Crowe. I love it. It's weird. That ending sequence where he's going up the elevator. Anyways, this isn't a Tom Cruise podcast, but yeah, we'll come back to that. My second, I guess my last honorable mention is another one that's kind of playing on the nostalgia factor for me, at least. 1995, summer of 95. I would have been 12. No, I would have been about to turn 12. My brother would have been 7, about to turn 8. And we went to the Lake Theater in Oak Park, Illinois. And we were really excited to see Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. The movie. He was more excited than I was, but I think it was one of those things like he watched, because he was 7, so he watched the TV show.
And it's Morphin time!
Back in the day, you didn't have like multiple TVs or devices. You kind of had to watch, right? Like you watched what your brother wanted to watch, and then you hoped to get the remote to find like the Goosebumps when they started making those into TV movies. But yeah, so we saw that in theaters. And I remember, like, I thought it was going to be bad, or I wanted it to be bad, so I was trying to, like, play it cool. And then it was, like, it's enjoyable. I think that's something that people in that age range, you know,
sure,
between 7 to 13, have revisited. And I think it was certainly better than the Power Rangers that we saw a couple of years ago. I would say that with a lot of certainty. So, but yeah, that was another one of those summer hot movies. Cold, that Lake Theater, man, been around forever. And again, one of those places that you could just go and beat the heat during the summer. So I don't think it deserves to be in a top 20 list, but it is an honorable mention for sure, because it triggers a lot of good nostalgic memories.
And I think here too, for the listener, this isn't going to be what we think are the three best movies ever released on 4th of July. Overall.
My number one is the best, period.
Well, I know what that, your number one is, because I think it's the one that is your number one movie of all time.
It's in the top five.
Yeah. But so yeah,
no, I think.
But I'm just saying, we may say like things that you're like, I can't believe that they're saying that over this. There might be a couple of those. For me, these are my favorite movies that I've seen that were released over 4th of July. I'm not going to be submitting these to the AFI for their list of what may be the best ranked.
What I think you should do is you should start with your number three,
yes,
4th of July movie right after a quick break, so that we can go step outside and light off a couple.
Pew!
Whatever Joe Dirt calls it, whiz bangers.
Whiz bangers. Whirling dervishes. I don't know if that's right, but that's right. We'll take a break.
So, hang on. 4th of July extravaganza, the Buffer Podcast on your smart devices or online with Spotify, Anchor.fm, Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe each week. New content delivered to your ears, and we appreciate you listening. So this week, special edition, 4th of July. Joel is about to tell us his number three 4th of July movie. Then I'll go, then we'll go 2-2, and then Uno, 1-1, and we'll see if we maybe have any. Are we in agreement on any of these? That'll be interesting, because I don't know your list.
Yeah.
But what is number three for you?
Number three for me, and it's hard because I wanted to put Adventures of Babysitting as my number three. But I just watched it the other day. But it didn't make it. And my number three is perhaps one of the most influential movies of my life. The one that I can remember vividly sitting in my friend Greg's basement and watching the VHS tape every single day for the 7-day rental that we got it from the video store here in Muscatine. And that is arguably one of the best movie musicals of all time. And that is South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut from 1999. Holy Blame cow, Canada man. On this 4th of July weekend. South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut, my number three. Just a brilliant movie. Brilliantly written. South Park is a seminal text of my comedic mind as a child and as a teenager. I have a 5-year-old son who doesn't know all of the words to the song, but will walk around the house singing Mr. Hanky, the Christmas Poo. And then squeeze in from your festive buns.
My dad thought Mr. Hanky was the funniest thing ever. He did. I mean, you find that hard to believe, I'm sure, but he just, like, I feel like, okay, so we're almost the same age, and, like, South Park came on. I feel like I've had waves of South Park. Like, I really liked it, then I kind of got away from it.
Yeah.
And then I started to realize how smart it was and how on topic it was, and then you find out that they're making the episodes the same week that they're airing, and then for you understood before I did, certainly. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are geniuses. Brilliant, and that's evident in everything else that they've done, with the exception of maybe Orgasmo, which is still
great. I'll still watch it. Yeah. 1999, I was doing my college visits, so I was a senior. 1999, 2000 was my senior year of high school, and so I was doing my college visits, and when I visited one school, I was Bemidji State, I think, up in Bemidji, Minnesota. Wow. One of the guys that I stayed with had a copy of the first episode of South Park, you know, the whole one that kind of went viral, like, but it was viral on college campuses where copies just got mailed to different campuses. So that was where I first saw South Park, and then the movie came out, because and then obviously Comedy Central had picked it up too, so we were on board. And the whole, for me, watching them lampoon all of the different musicals that they lampoon throughout that entire, and I still say the butt four joke when my friends and I are together and we're going to, like, a bunch of groups together, someone always says, you know, if we get into trouble, I'll make this sound, and does the dying giraffe sound. Like, it's just, it is imprinted in a group of friends that makes it so important. So that's why it's number three for me, and I can watch it any day, and I believe it's on Amazon Prime right now. So it's, no, it might be on HBO Max, but either way, I've watched it probably 6 times a year, every year since 1999.
I will say, I haven't seen it in a while, but I know it's great. South Park did a couple of very well done, like, pandemic specials.
Oh, they were brilliant.
HBO
brilliant.
Max. And they're really good. It's just one of those things, like, The Simpsons don't ever seem to be going away. And I say that knowing that perhaps maybe in the next 10 years, I don't know. But I'm 37, and I feel like The Simpsons have been a part of my life since I can remember. And certainly South Park has not, but it doesn't seem like it's slowing down. And that being said, those guys could really do whatever they want. But they must love the freedom that they have with that show, because certainly the topics and the things that they've said, you know, and they've spoken, Trey and Matt have spoken to, like, the standards people, and how they fight them to get things on the air. But there's something about that ability for them to just watch the news and then react. And even though it's, you know, kind of disguised as this cartoon, they're really able to say a lot of things.
It's biting political commentary, yeah, a lot. I mean, it's so really, it's so great, because it's all through the eyes of these these kids and the idiot adults around them.
But I think you have to admit, though, they're, and maybe I'm wrong, but again, I'm not the expert, but it does seem like there was maybe a shift. Like the show initially wasn't, you know, it was more silly and it dealt with the relationships. And
well, I think too, you just look at it as the creators get older. Like when they first created it, you know, they're in their mid-20s and it's like all fart jokes and exactly. And this and then it's like, oh, okay, but we're also really smart people. And the documentary 6 days to Air, they need to make another one. And it needs, so good. Yeah. So yeah, so that's my pick. We could talk for hours on it because it's. Yeah. I think it's that good.
I'm gonna go a little quick with my number three because it surfaced during the episode one of the special Buffer Baseball podcast with a secondary or a second or follow-up episode has to be happening soon because it was so enjoyable with J.D. Shulton. And
he was just in the Quad Cities yesterday. I missed him. I had baseball conflicts, but
yeah, J.D. seems like he's going to be very busy. Might be hard to get him.
Right.
There may be layers to get to him. So I think we gotta
strike while the iron's hot here.
Exactly. But yeah, so it's a baseball movie, and it's one of those that I've seen A League of Their Own probably 100 times, whether it's in its entirety or having it on VHS, having it on DVD, and then just finding it on cable. A League of Their Own brings me a lot of joy. I love baseball. I'm going to a Cubs game on my birthday this year, September 5th, and I'm excited about that. League of Their Own came out in 92. Penny Marshall directed. She's wonderful. You know all of this because it's a classic. But I also, you know, the Rockford Peaches, you know, that was a real team. There's a real stadium you can visit in Rockford, Illinois. And I didn't grow up too far from there in Elmwood Park, Illinois, and then Oak Park, Illinois, both suburbs of Chicago. And, you know, they filmed some of it at Wrigley Field, and it was just, it's just a brilliant, there's so many good performances. Madonna surprised a lot of people. Rosie O'Donnell kind of broke through. Meg Cavanaugh, Marla Hooch is my friend Steve's aunt. I've said that before. And I don't try to have like, I'm not that guy that name drops. I'm just saying like, that's just a weird coincidence that my friend Steve's aunt is an actress and she played Marla Hooch and Al Borland's girlfriend on Home Improvement. I love A League of Their Own. I'd watch it right now if it were on. Tom Hanks is unbelievable. And I got to watch when I kind of worked part-time with a minor league baseball team in Davenport, one of the players signed a baseball, Avoid the Clap, and it was great. So
that's great. A League of Their Own,
I can't tell you that I recall A League of Their Own being released around the 4th of July, because in 92 I'm, you know, 8 years old, but it is certainly a staple in my house. My wife enjoys it as well. So that's my number three. Who or what makes it to number two for you? Because this feels like this is going to be a big movie.
It is, and I think it's going to be a surprise. You've heard me talk about this movie before in the newspaper office. I absolutely adore this movie. And it's one that I shouldn't think it's as great as it is, but Meryl Streep, Stanley Tucci, Emily Blunt, and Anne Hathaway, The Devil Wears Prada. I absolutely love this movie. Everything about it, it's not a romantic comedy. It's like kind of a self-discovery movie, I guess, is probably if you want to go too deep dive into it. But just the working for an overbearing boss in a very challenging industry, someone whose approval you're just constantly working for, even though this is the fashion industry, and you know, myself, a former college defensive lineman and D-line coach, that's probably not the first movie you're gonna think I'm gonna think of. But I really think the coaching world that I started to come up in, our head coach is a man to this day that I still just want his approval. Even though I've received it many, many times over and I have a great relationship with the man, and he wasn't a cold, shut off person quite like the Meryl Streep character was, but he was someone you didn't waste his time. And I think I watched this movie and I can relate so much to being that intern, that young talented, but, you know, unsure, kind of fish out of water, kind of, because this character, I just relate to that Anne Hathaway character so much. And there's a Coach Ryan Norse was kind of the Stanley Tucci guy in my life, who's like, okay, that didn't go well, but here's where this could be better. And then he would teach, he taught me how to be a better coach. And so I just, there's so many parallels into my early professional career that I draw. And is it a stretch? Probably. But for some reason, it just hit me. And I love that movie. I think it's fantastic.
Can I give you my 4-word review of Devil Wears Prada?
Do it.
Ain't never seen it. That's my review.
I'm telling, good. It's good.
I like Anne Hathaway. Stanley Tucci, and I love Meryl Streep. I mean, who doesn't?
And Emily Blunt. It's like Emily Blunt's first big movie. Shines in it, by the way.
And my wife loves that movie. And I think I've had.
I feel like your wife and I should sit down and watch more movies. like you're always like, ugh. And I'm like, I love that movie. I will watch it.
I'm over here just like, I think I promise you, in our relationship, my wife and I have lied about having seen Devil Wears Prada to avoid watching it. 70, if I'm wrong, again, 75% of the critics on Rotten Tomatoes, which again isn't the go-to, but I just like looking at it. So I bet I could have described the plot. If you asked me, if you were like, here's a bag of $1 million cash, can you tell me what happens in The Devil Wears Prada? So that means that I've maybe seen 5 minutes of it, but I feel like I have a pretty good idea of the premise. And like eventually Anne Hathaway's character succeeds, right? Like, and she becomes the editor of a fashion magazine.
I won't spoil it. I'm going to make you watch it and come back sometime.
That's fair. That's what a good friend would do, is not spoil The Devil Wears Prada.
Hey,
15 years after the fact.
Correct.
I can dig it. Okay, so at least, I mean, I know that we're not doing like the Buffer Confessions, but I don't really feel bad about not having seen that. And that's not out of like an ego or macho place. I certainly love a good rom-com. Like, what is it? How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
That's my solid rom-com. That was one of the first dates of my wife and I went and saw. And the song solid. Feels Like Just Home to Me was our first dance at our wedding reception from that movie. Yep.
Wow. Justin Long?
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Yeah.
No, Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson.
Which one am I thinking? Isn't Justin Long like a bartender in that movie?
I don't think so.
Okay. I might be wrong. Isn't Jennifer Aniston in that?
Nope.
Am I thinking of another one?
Yep.
Is there another breakup? Not The Breakup.
That one's different. Yeah.
It's fun. All right. I'm going to go to my number 2, which is not a rom-com.
Yeah.
But again, it is another.
Is it Inner Space?
No. It deals with space, though. So it's the summer of whenever it came out. I'm going to look really quick because I can't remember. It's the summer of 1995 again. I saw a lot of movies.
Well, in 1995 is arguably the greatest movie year ever.
It was raining. So that's, you're right, Joel. It's definitely one of them. You could throw music, the music in 95 in there as well for pretty darn good year, 94, 95, 96. This is on vacation. It's either Wisconsin or Michigan with my dad's side of the family. Always went on a 2-week vacation. It rained. It was still hot. It was humid. Went to some podunk arse theater. Again, the AC was rocking. And it was one of those movies that I was like, yeah, that sounds good, Dad. Like, we either go bowling or see movies that you like. So you're paying. Here we go. And it turned out to be a very good movie, but it was longer than I was prepared for at 12 years old or 11 years old. And it was Apollo 13. So, and it's one of those movies that I have rewatched, and I certainly appreciate it.
This is my number one.
As older as I figured it was going to be. I think we all miss Bill Paxton, who gives a phenomenal performance amongst, you know, everybody else. Kevin Bacon's really good. Of course, Tom Hanks is just a killer. So I can turn it over to you since it's your number one, and you can speak to the affinity that you have for Apollo 13.
Just love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love Ron Howard. Love Tom Hanks. Love the story. Love the trumpet interlude at the beginning. in my life, I've also had beers with that trumpet player at the Iowa Michigan State game in 2001.
And who is that trumpet player?
I cannot remember his name. I can't remember his name, but he's a Michigan State alum, and he was back for homecoming. And my girlfriend at the time, her boyfriend or her brother-in-law, was a professor at Michigan State. So it was me, my brother, and my girlfriend's brother-in-law, my girlfriend Branford Marsalis, and this trumpet player. And I can't remember his name for the life of me. But that was like his big thing was, and that was right post 9/11. So he played that Apollo 13 trumpet interlude at halftime with the Michigan State marching band, and that's not why I love this movie long before that, but it's John Williams is his score, and it's,
you give us a little trumpet, brilliant. A little mouth trumpet, as we're known to do. This is going to be Joel's TikTok virality.
Which song do you want? Would you? I don't have.
What do you mean?
I don't have the Apollo 13. I don't have the Apollo 13
melody.
I don't have it.
Here's what it's going to sound like. What do you mean you don't know what it's going to sound like? You
can hum, we could do some Girl from Ipanema.
Make it sound like a trumpet.
I just don't.
Or just hum it. I mean, it's not like, it's like Jurassic Park. I mean, it's like the same thing.
We can do, I'll do but Jurassic
ultimately
Park.
It's just. Like,
it's my odd sorry. Talent.
Oh, you're saying you can't recall the Apollo 13 one.
Yes, that's correct. Gotcha. I don't have the actual mem, and I know we have lots of nerds that will call me out on it. Please.
Well, you didn't make a friend with James Horner, that's for sure.
Oh, see, that's right. It is Horner, not John Williams.
I only know that because I have Wikipedia.
That's my bad. I have that usually categorical, but
you're a pretty big Ron Howard fan, so I'm not surprised.
I just think it's just such a good movie. Like, and I like historical fiction, so I know it's not a chalk version of the story, but it's pretty close. So,
oh, for sure. No,
My favorite scene in the movie is the engineers where they're all sitting in the room, and they dump the box out and they say, "Here's what they have. How can we fix it?" And like that is one of my favorite. One of my favorite scenes. And in my radio career, I got to be on like a conference call in the newspaper for an article when the anniversary of Apollo 13 happened. One of the engineers who was in that room, like, they was on like a big like conference call, and I got on it, and he was talking about how that's actually happened, that's one of the more accurate parts of the movie, that they literally were sitting in the room with all they had and trying to fix it.
It's really good, and I feel like I'm trying to think of just another podcast we could do. Is just, are there any bad space movies? I'm sure the answer is yes.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of good space movies too.
Flash Gordon, is it good? Is it bad? Is it space? Armageddon, is it like good? Is it bad? Armageddon. Is it space?
I don't want to lose any listeners, but I think Armageddon is hot garbage.
I've never seen it, so...
Don't see it. It's not good.
So what's your number one, since you stole mine?
Future. Back to the Future. Easy. It's just the best. I mean, you don't even know this, but I am trying to work with a Back to the Future time machine replica company to get one of the replica Back to the Future DeLoreans to town for a fundraiser.
Nice.
I would almost give them a plug but I don't think it's going to help. But it's not cheap to bring a car like that to town. But anyways, it's Back to the Future. I mean, it's arguably in my top three of favorite movies of all time. It's certainly in my top five. I have gone on record saying that I enjoy Back to the Future Part 2 more. And I only say that because in 1985, when Back to the Future comes out, I'm not even two, right?
Right.
So, but it quickly becomes part of my life as I just get a couple of years older. And then certainly when Part 2 comes out in 89, but Back to the Future is just, I don't know. There's a couple of movies, you know, we talk about it. Like I just said, with A League of Their Own, if it's on, I'm there. When Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3 were on Netflix, and I don't know if they're still there, I started watching it, and my oldest son kind of sat through it, and it was one of those first times where I feel like our kids can be so easily distracted. It's kind of hard for them to sit through a movie, let alone a movie that they've never seen that looks kind of old. But he was all in on part three for sure, because he loves steam trains. But yeah, Back to the Future is something that I assume everybody has seen. They should never, ever think about remaking or doing a fourth one. And I hope that if I can ever afford it in my life, I would buy a DeLorean, even though I don't really fit into it because it's a really small car, not very practical. But that is my childhood experience. I have an autograph replica hoverboard that Christopher Lloyd signed.
Nice.
I got to interview Chris Lloyd in my lifetime. I've interviewed Leah Thompson, Tom Wilson. Almost spent, and I should have, damn it. If I had a time machine right now, I would drive back. I would drive back to 2016, and I would say, just go ahead and spend the $400, dummy, and go to Chicago Comic Con and meet the whole cast and get a picture taken.
We all have those regrets. Mine was going to work for the company we worked for in 2016.
I should have gone and done it. And I would love nothing more than to have an opportunity or had an opportunity to interview Michael J. Fox. I have his most recent book and I've read it. And I mean, Dork thinks he's going to drown. Right.
Right.
And you are a person that has worn vests in your life more than I have.
Yes.
And every time I see someone with a vest, and I like vests.
Every time you see me, you grab me and say the line.
Such a
which is most
line.
Of my winter wardrobe, because I don't, my arms are hot, but my torso is very cold.
So Back to the Future is my number.
Great.
I feel like Back to the Future and Apollo 13 are timeless.
Yeah.
If you're telling somebody that maybe just like woke up from the Ice Age or whatever, Captain America, and you're like, all right, you're still thawing out, you're going to watch these three movies this weekend, I think we did a pretty good job.
I would agree. And obviously there's probably someone yelling at their phone or wherever they listen right now.
Well, let's
how do you not do Independence Day?
Exactly.
It's a great movie. Yep. A phenomenal cast. Phenomenal movie. It's just... It's so obvious how great it is. And yeah.
And you could say the same thing about, you know, I didn't even realize Coming to America, Terminator 2.
And I wasn't kidding about Interspace. I watched that a lot as a kid.
There's some behemoths on this list. I just think, you know, Independence Day, Welcome to Earth.
Right.
He punches the alien in the face. He punt
in the face.
Will Smith.
Judd Hirsch.
Alien.
Dynamo in that movie.
Cousin Eddie flew the fighter jet into
perfect.
The spaceship.
Yeah, it's a perfect movie, and we probably could do another round of this.
I hope
everybody has a great 4th of July, because we need to be wrapping this up. Because how many hot dogs could you eat at one sitting?
Hi.
If you were a hot dog, I can't do it tonight. My voice is all messed up.
We're taping this on June 29th, and for dinner, I had one Portillo's Chicago hot dog.
Nice.
So I could eat two of those. But I can't speak for you, Joel, but I haven't really done a lot of food challenges. That can be sometimes a misconception of folks that are not small.
Are you saying that I look large?
You can't go down a 5-pound burrito? No, I don't want to die. I'm sorry.
I have done one competitive eating challenge that was on like that Man versus Food show, and it was the meter worst challenge. It's the meter long bratwurst in Minneapolis. And it was surprisingly not hard. And so
he's packing it away.
Yeah. And but yes.
Meter worse, more like meter. Wow. Was the bun a meter long too?
No, there was no bun. So you it's like wrapped, it's like coiled into like a sausage.
Easy.
Yeah, it was.
Did
not
you have like hot mustard to dip it in?
You had to eat, but you also had to eat two sides. So,
it looks the same way going in as out.
Right. So meter in, meter out. Spreckenzie deuce. Wow.
Wasn't meter in, meter out your stage name as you were dancing your way through college too? and a great band, a great band name.
Meter in, meter out.
Yeah. Tommy Leon.
The backup singers are the Meter Maids.
That's right. Dirk Diggler on upright bass.
Okay, we're crossing into the world of we have real jobs, so we got to be careful. But
competitive eating. So you've done a competitive eating challenge.
Yeah. I was 27 when I did it. So
I'll probably watch. I'm assuming they're doing the Nathan hot dog eating contest. It's on ESPN. You know, I mean,
it's ESPN, disgusting. I honestly can't watch that. It's
I just feel like it's
watching
so
them just jump up and down and shake it down their gullet.
Ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. But this
reversal of fortune.
This is why you love America, because Joey Chestnut and others have made a living eating.
Yes,
that's their job in America. They're paying their mortgage via competitive eating.
Good for them. I just hope they dip it in ranch. That's all. That's all I care about. So.
All right, friends. Well, thank you for tuning in to this special edition of the Buffer Podcast, 4th of July movies. Again, please do us a favor. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm, wherever you get your podcasts. And then if you're feeling so inclined, rate and review the podcast. It helps us immensely.
God bless the Bufferheads and God bless America.